Well, thanks, Stephanie. I'm really pleased to be with you here this morning. It's nice to see some familiar faces, too, like Craig and Dana and Don and Mary and others, and appreciate your long history as a church, and good to be with you this morning. Also grateful for getting to know Stephanie over the last year and a bit. Stephanie's grandfather was actually the pastor of the church when I was a little kid I grew up in, and we have lots of family connections along the way, so it's been nice to connect together with Stephanie. I am grateful for this long history that you've had as a church here at Olivet, and I am grateful for the pastoral colleagues who've been a part of this church that I've had over the years as well. I'm also aware of the many transitions that churches are facing today, and that Olivet has faced many transitions and is facing many transitions ahead. All churches, of course, have had to navigate the transitions of COVID. But I think the larger transitions being called forth today from the church are connected to being part of a culture where Christianity is on the back burner for many people. Or to that we live in a culture that Canadian philosopher Charles Taylor describes where people live with an immanent frame without a sense of the transcendent in their lives. And I think we all know how easy it is to live a life that's kind of where God becomes pretty superfluous to how we live our daily lives. Many of our models of church, of course, were developed during Christendom, during a time where if we had good worship like we did today and good preaching, people would come. But those days are no more. And so we're facing these transitions of what do we do in light of that reality. And of course, transitions can be tiring, and maybe you feel a bit of the fatigue of transitions. I know I burnt out after 30 years of dealing with a lot of transitions at Grandview. These transitions can tempt us to withdraw or just try to cope. But transitions can also turn our attention towards God. And they can, sometimes these difficult transitions can even be the impetus for us to ask what God might be doing through these transitions among us and around us in our cities. And my desire this morning is to turn our attention towards God and towards a particular action of God. And I want to focus our attention on the action of God that significantly influenced our journey and mission as a church at Grandview over the 3 decades that I was there. And what I want to talk about is the biblical vision of God's hospitality and welcome. God's hospitality and welcome to us and to your neighbors here in New West. And after we explore this welcome into the circle of God's love, I want to describe some of the ways that we tried to live that out at Grandview. The ways that we try to participate in God's welcome to our neighborhood. We were stretched and humbled, but inspired, too, by this vision of God's welcome, and it guided us for a long time. I'm not telling you the story though, so that you'll do all the things that Grandview did or make all the mistakes that we did. I hope you won't. But so that it might spark your imagination for ways that God is calling you to share in this welcome, and how sharing in that welcome may help all of it transition into a good future. So the extravagance of God's welcome is apparent in this parable that Elliot read for us this morning, and it has this little part before it where Jesus describes what kind of party we should be creating. Listen to these words one more time. When you give a luncheon or dinner, do not invite your friends, your brothers or sisters, your relatives, or your rich neighbors. If you do, they may invite you back, and so you will be repaid. But when you give a banquet, invite the poor, the crippled, the lame, the blind, and you will be blessed. I want to say off the top that I find this parable very challenging personally. I don't know about you, but this Jesus' party instructions don't fit many of my parties. How often do we have these kinds of gatherings where we invite those who don't get invited, who may not be easy guests? The parable exposes the difference between many of our gatherings and the parties that Jesus held. One more preliminary point about the parable and the meaning of Jesus' parties. Jesus' parties weren't just festive events pointing out what a good guy he was. In these events, Jesus was signaling that the time had come when God has come to restore God's people and to once again become king of his people in Palestine. The meals were a sign that God was acting to fulfill the long-promised vision of the Old Testament to restore God's people, especially the poor and the marginalized. I like this picture here of the kind of, for me, paints a picture of what the Old Testament prophets describe when they talk about meals in the Old Testament. We find this kind of vision in passages like in Deuteronomy, where the people are called out to put out the red carpet for the, quote, foreigners, the fatherless, and the widows among you. Or in the picture of Isaiah, where we read that the Lord will make for all peoples a feast of rich food and well-aged wines. He will wipe away tears from all faces, and the disgrace of his people he will take away from the earth. So when Jesus moves throughout Israel, throwing these feasts with all the marks of the meals described in Deuteronomy and Isaiah, we should understand that something was happening. Jesus was inaugurating God's kingdom on earth. This was a sign of what the world looks like when God becomes king. What it also makes clear is that how we eat together carries great significance. How we eat together carries great significance. If you want to bear witness to the world as God intends it to be, you best get ready to alter, shift your own meal plans. So in Jesus' next parable, the one we heard, it becomes clear that not everybody's willing to do that. Not everybody's willing to alter their meal plans. In the parable of the great banquet, Jesus explains both why he's throwing parties all over Palestine, but inviting all the wrong guests to his feasts, and why most of the, quote, respectable people were snubbing their noses at him. So notice again what happens in that parable. Jesus describes how the host of this big party pulls out his papyrus Rolodex, invites all the movers and shakers that he knows, and they all turn him down to his party. And listen to their excuses. First one says that he has to go check out a field he just bought. Biblical commentator Kenneth Bailey, a man who lived in the Middle East for many years, observes that no one in the Middle East would buy land without first inspecting it for the quality of soil or the availability of water or the inclination towards the sun. And the next excuse is similar. The second man informs him that he's purchased 5 pair of oxen and must now put them to the test. You know, that was a serious investment back then, like buying 5 vehicles today that you wouldn't do without checking them out. The excuses offered are really more of an insult rather than a reason for not being part of the party. The third excuse is interesting. It's offered by a man who claimed that his recent marriage prohibited him from accepting the invitation. That may be the most valid reason of all in this list why he couldn't be at this party. But Jesus will pick up on this demanding statement, this reason in his demanding statement not to allow your family to become an idol that prevents you from following him. So after all these known and respected people turn down the invitation, the host sends out messengers to invite those who typically don't get invited, strangers, even enemies. And Jesus' guest list reflects the instructions in this parable we heard today. When you give a banquet, invite the poor, the crippled, the lame, the blind, and you will be blessed. What the parable makes clear is that the invited guests were missing out on what God was doing through Jesus. In Jesus, God was proclaiming good news to the poor, freedom to the prisoners, recovery of sight to the blind. God was acting to fulfill these promises through Jesus. The lavish love of God was reaching far and wide to the very edges of that society. And most of the people were missing out on what God was doing. And yet the most unexpected people were getting in on God's action. You see the challenge of this parable today for the church, first of all? To put it another way, it seems to me that if we are to learn, if we can learn how again to become neighbors, intentionally loving those around us, especially the poor and the outsider, then the church may not only find itself being pulled into the story of God once again, the church may have a significant future, even in a secular age. Over the years, the challenge of God's hospitality to the poor and the outsider, the challenge of this parable, became the impetus for many of the initiatives that began at Grandview over the years. And I want to tell you some of these stories. And what I want to do is to spark your imagination to think, well, how's God calling us here at Olivet to participate in this lavish welcome of God in New West, personally and as a church? One of the first responses we made has to do with a community meal and shelter, first called Out of the Cold and then called Crossroads. And I like that name, Crossroads, because this meal became one of those places where strangers meet with each other in a kind of neutral space and get to know each other. And that took place in the hall of the church building. It was one of those places where people's paths cross across the barriers that so often divide us in society. It's one of those places strangers become friends, and I think we need more of those spaces in our society today. For over 25 years, this meal was a place in our neighborhood and it included overnight shelter for many years for people who lived on or near the street. It was really our neighbors who challenged us to do this. I was at a meeting of our local social services and health education professionals, and we were talking about the neighborhood, and somebody said, "Tim, what are the churches doing to help those on the street?" And I said, "Nothing that I know of." Came back to the church that Sunday, told that story, and about 30 people gathered, and eventually we started this meal. That meal became a place for people to develop relationships across those barriers, and those relationships in turn invited us to take further steps of welcome. And one of those welcomes was to welcome people into our homes and houses, especially those more vulnerable. That became the mission of Salisbury Community Society that we started alongside the church. Salisbury began when a group of people were looking at forming community in an older adults residence about 5 blocks north of the church. And as we started to explore buying it, the city said, "Well, you'll have to do seismic upgrading if it changes use from a senior's home to a community living place." And so we used to joke that they didn't mind if it fell down on older people. They didn't want it falling down on younger people. Of course, if you're in urban planning, you know it's a lot more complicated than that. But after that, we left saddened, and we met together to grieve that loss, only to be inspired by the idea of sharing homes, sharing housing and homes together in geographical proximity to one another. And we began with the 2 houses adjacent to our church building as a place of forming shared life together in that way. It's been our own family's journey over the last 30 years. It kind of started haphazardly for us with an immigrant family that needed housing, and they stayed with us for 1.5 years. And then there was a woman who was going through a divorce and depression, needed a place for a weekend. She stayed for 1.5 years. And then there was a single mom that we were getting to know in the neighborhood, and she had a bad landlord who would barge into her place. She needed a place for 2 weeks. She stayed with us for 1.5 years. And so you kind of get the picture. I sometimes say people live with us for 1.5 years, they realize what we're really like, and then they move out. Of course, it's not altogether like that, although there is this rhythm of kind of getting to know each other and then finding out the challenges of loving each other and then moving, being called to love each other more deeply. Someone said that Vancouver and the Metro Vancouver's problem is not just one of a lack of housing, it's a problem of too many empty bedrooms, too many empty bedrooms. Jesus' vision of hospitality is indeed lavish. Of course, it was also mutual, that you see in the life of Jesus, where he received welcome as well as extending it to others. I experienced this mutuality of hospitality deeply from a group of refugees that became part of our church. They were from Myanmar, from Burma, and they showed up at our church through connections that we had with a local refugee agency. And some of these folks wanted to study the Bible. And the only night that it worked for them to study was Saturday night. And I, for the life of me, I couldn't find anybody else to lead this group that they wanted to have. And so I ended up leading this group, and it was not my first choice. Saturday night wasn't the best night for me to go out. I'm also a Canucks fan. You know, I've suffered long. There's some hope this year. But I would prefer to stay home and watch them on a Saturday night, but I would go to this group. And it was a challenging group to lead because some people spoke Karen, some people spoke Burmese. If we translate English, Burmese, Karen, take us about half an hour to go through three verses. And then they had this fish soup that for the life of me, I could not handle. My stomach could not handle. And so it was a difficult night to go there. But every time I left that house, I felt newly alive. These folks had nothing materially, and yet they were so grateful. They lived with such deep gratitude to God, and they were so interested in me as a person. When I left that home, I would say that my lungs felt full again with air. Eventually, some of the folks moved away from East Van to other parts that were a bit more affordable, but Winston and Julie stayed and became part of the church, and Winston actually became a pastor about 10 years ago. Receiving the hospitality of those whom you serve is part of how we affirm the welcome of God. Now, two houses where the bedrooms are always filled are at Kinbrace. And some of you I know about Kinbrace. Kinbrace began over 25 years ago when Lauren and Tama Beliski had a dream of providing a home and support for refugee claimants. Kinbrace is two houses side by side with 10 suites where refugee claimants, those making a claim for protection at our borders, are welcome to live until after the outcome of their refugee claim, often anywhere from about 6 months right now. About 450 people have lived at Kinbrace over the last 25 years, some of the most vulnerable people in our world, and they found a landing spot, a welcome, and a home there. If there is any group who knows what it is to be on the outside, I think refugee claimants are those folks. And of course, I know that you have a home, two houses here, and that you've been involved with Journey Home, and this has been a part of your story as a church too, and so grateful for that. And part of my work at CityGate is to help churches work together to address these kinds of issues together. And so 2 months ago, we had 80 people gathering together to think about how can we work towards providing more permanent, more transitional housing for refugee claimants in our lower mainland here. And you're welcome to be a part of that or to find out more if you'd like. We'd love to have Olivet be a part of that. Let me tell you about another project in our next slide. This is a picture of the Cohere building at First and Victoria. So in about 2002, Grandview purchased a lot next door to its parking lot with the aim of moving its shelter, it's a drop-in center rather, over to that place. And we had got a bad inspection on that place. It ended up having to be torn down. And then we established some community gardens there, and it became an impetus to have a visioning process as a church saying, what's God calling us to do with this piece of land? That began a long journey, these things can take time, towards developing a housing project called Cohere, or Community Here. And what does that project look like? Well, the Cohere project involves underground parking, mostly for the church. The city doesn't require parking for social housing anymore. And then there's 26 units of housing structured in four hubs, where five or six of these places open up into a common living room. And then there's also a floor of community space with a dining room and living room and kitchen and community gardens. It's the first time we were able to design something that fostered community through the architecture, and it was a fun experience to be a part of. 4 weeks ago, I organized a two-day conference where over 160 people gathered from across the country to talk, to reimagine what we could be doing with church properties. And we heard many other stories besides the Cohere building of how churches are using underutilized church land to develop housing and other community spaces. And I know you too have been discerning what this land might become. And I'm glad to share in that conversation with you if I can be of any help. Not only could building homes and other community spaces on underutilized land or over top of surface parking lots serve to reroute churches in their neighborhoods, I think it could also put a dent into our affordability crisis in the Lower Mainland. I mean, can you imagine if the churches in Metro Vancouver took up this call to welcome the stranger and the vulnerable by building an affordable housing around our cities? Can you imagine the change in perception that might bring to the church? Or how this might bear witness to this gathering that God's Spirit is doing in our city, welcoming the least among us? I think there's an urgency in Jesus' call to us this morning, not just for the church, but for society as a whole. If we limit our care to family and friends, our humanity will begin to shrink, and our society's division between the rich and the poor will widen. We run the risk of perpetuating the many misunderstandings, exclusion, and hatred that exist just below the surface, which cropped up, for example, in times of COVID, times of crisis. What's more, if we fail to make room for the poor and the outsider, we'll be missing out on a big part of what God is doing in our cities. We'll be like the invited guests to God's banquet, who end up as bystanders to God's lavish welcome. Maybe God seems absent to many of us today because we aren't participating in God's welcome of others. That's the warning of this parable. Welcome only your own, and society will fragment even more, and you'll be missing out on God, on seeing God at work in our society. That's the warning, but here's the good news. The God we meet in Christ is acting among you and in our cities to lift up the poor, to gather the refugee, the homeless, and the outsider. God is inviting you to participate in this healing work of hospitality. Which, of course, makes me wonder this morning, what does it mean for Olivet to share and extend this welcome of God in ways beyond what you're already doing? It was actually 1 year ago to this date, what made me think of this story a little bit was I was flying home from Toronto on an airplane at a group where a gathering I had done around reimagining church properties there. And I was sitting next to a young woman, and I found out she was from Bangladesh, and I could tell she was quite anxious, quite nervous. And I asked her why she was nervous as we started talking a little bit, and she said, well, I have these two big cases. I don't know anybody in Canada. I don't know how I'm going to get these cases to my Airbnb. And I said, look, just relax. My wife is picking me up. We have a van. We can take you there. You just rest. And she fell asleep. I learned later that was the first sleep she'd had in 26 hours of traveling. And to make a long story short, we took her home to her Airbnb. The next day, I had a couple hours. I took her to her school, got her a SIM card and a bus pass, And then she ended up staying with us for the next week with her friend Shadi, who also came from Bangladesh. And they ended up staying in the guest room at Cohere for a week. And then they finally found a place. After looking for 30 places, they ended up sharing a one-bedroom for $1,400 a month in an eight-bedroom house. Kind of tells you where we're at there. We welcomed Orpita and Shadi, and then later their husbands into our lives, and they have become such a gift to us. They treat us as aunt and uncle. They lavish us with gifts. They are so gracious towards us and welcoming, and it's been such a gift to get to know them. We had them over just at the end of Ramadan and had a wonderful feast together with them just a few weeks back. A while after getting to know Orpita, she told me that when she left Bangladesh, her mother prayed that someone on the plane would help her to get situated in Vancouver. I had no idea about that story, but the Spirit clearly did. And the Spirit brought us together to build a friendship together. And we have been blessed. How is God inviting you to step into this life of receiving and extending the welcome of God in Christ? How's God inviting you to become a neighbor in a deeper way, intentionally loving those next to you? May God guide you as a church in this calling and give you imagination to live into God's welcome. I want to end with a prayer, and I'm going to invite you to pray silently with me, and I'll lead you in that. So let's pray together now. I invite you to, in this silence moment, to listen to the Spirit's prompting about a person or persons in your life, perhaps a geographical neighbor, a workmate, a refugee you know, someone whom the Spirit is prompting you to welcome into your life in a deeper way. Let's take a moment of silence to reflect on who the Spirit is prompting you to take that step towards.